Many doctors are pushing for legislative action to limit vaping as the number of illnesses and death tied to the practice continues to rise. Advocate Broman healthcare pulmonologist John Burr tells WGLT's Eric Stock medical professionals are learning more about e-cigarette harmful effects.
There's been an accumulating morbidity from vaping recently. The prior concerns were a lot of the vaping devices that use ignition produce a certain level of formaldehyde, which is different in the different vaping devices. And the formaldehyde itself is a known carcinogen and also has other possible damage to the tissues if inhaled in a great enough quantity. And then any particulate stream that contains a lot of lipid or oil in it tends to be more of an irritant to the lungs. The resident cells in your lungs look at them as a foreign body and envelop them, and in that process cause initiation of inflammation in the lungs that can lead to either respiratory impairment or failure. And some people have had failure, ended up on the ventilator, and get better eventually, but it's a serious enough illness that you could die from it.
This mysterious lung disease has now sickened more than 800 people in the U.S. There have been 12 deaths, and you had indicated that these flavored e-cigarettes are not only potentially dangerous because of how they are marketed to young people, but they could, in fact, chemically be worse.
And that varies according to the flavor, and what I was told at a meeting I was at is that the dairy-flavored things tend to have more diacetyl compounds, which have been implicated in lung disease and the popcorn lung disease outbreak that, you know, was reported almost two decades ago now. And those flavorings in popcorn have been taken out so that the factory workers are safer. I don't know that we know enough about it to say which compounds are worse than others than flavorings, but if you see a pattern of chemical recognition where similar compounds have caused lung injury elsewhere, then I think you have to have a heightened awareness that those flavors could also do the same thing.
The CDC reports that 40% of those illnesses that we had mentioned are for those under the age of 21. We don't know if that's reflective of the percentage of e-cigarette users, or could it potentially be that a younger body may not be as capable of processing these chemicals in their body?
A lot of my patients are older in my practice, but I think a lot of the younger people seem impervious to the threat of illness compared to the older people that have been through life and maybe had been seriously ill once and they understand their mortality. I think when you're young, sometimes the risky behavior isn't always regarded in the same light. I also think that there has been a push to make the products appealing and very trendy to the young generation, and they're very influenced by what their friends do, what their friends think is cool.
So how many health incidents have you encountered here at Advocate Broman involving vaping?
I know of two incidents where nothing else was found except the history of vaping, and people came in with significant lung injury and had to be on oxygen for a few days, and fortunately none of them ended up on a ventilator.
Your advice to them is to simply stop vaping?
I asked them to stop vaping and to tell their friends to stop vaping because of the public health issues involved. And I think, you know, since at least one of them was a college student and a very smart guy, I might say, you know, he seemed very well educated at his level and remorseful for what had happened. I think if you can recruit people like that to get the message out too, it's going to be helpful. Not just doctors, but, you know, people that have been through it and say, hey, I went through this. I was in the hospital for 5 days because of this. And I think that's effective.
Do you think that message is getting through to the general population? We are hearing some reports that some of the retailers are seeing a decline in sales.
I know a CEO already left the company because of the threat of litigation.
And Juul.
Yeah. So I would say that the message is getting through to the manufacturers that this is becoming a riskier pursuit, more in line with the way tobacco was several years ago. But I think as long as there aren't regulations in place, probably it'll be whatever the market will bear.
As we continue on Sound Ideas, I'm Eric Stock with Dr. John Burr, pulmonologist at Advocate Broman Medical Center. Supporters of e-cigarettes, including those retailers who sell them, they say that e-cigarettes provide an off-ramp for those who use conventional cigarettes, and they say it is a safer alternative. Is it?
it's not as safe as people once believed, and I'm starting to wonder if I should have given more people advice early on to not vape. But looking at that 2-pack-per-day smoker, it's a relative risk, but when you're talking about a young person with no medical problems at all ending up on a ventilator, to me that's a different degree of problem, and especially if the consumption of these products becomes more widespread than it is.
So if I'm a 55-year-old 2-pack-a-day smoker for 30 years and I say, okay, I've now switched to e-cigarettes, what do you tell them?
Well, what I've been doing lately, since more data has come out on the health threats of it, is I tell them, you know, what I know about the flavors that are in some of them that could be dangerous to their health. I also tell them that it's, you know, really prolonging the actual quitting process sometimes, and it becomes, instead of the primary crutch, the next crutch. It's better not to put a high particulate stream into your lungs under any circumstances.
Well, e-cigarette backers also say that these illnesses, a lot of them are not tied to the e-cigarettes themselves, but to THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, or possibly worse substances that they are spiking these with. So they say don't blame the e-cigarette for that.
I still think unless they change the nature of the delivery devices to eliminate formaldehyde and they assure through regulation that the flavors that are actually in there are safe and do not cause harm, that takes a lot of time to prove. And because they're not regulated, they can make any claim they want and they don't have to prove it.
Are we in an era now, sort of back in, I guess it was about the 1960s, when they first said, okay, smoking cigarettes is bad for you, and everybody just thought it was fine, and then it became habit-forming for so many people that they simply weren't going to change despite all the mounting evidence that it was bad for you?
I think there's a risk in the younger population that they could become addicted and not change despite adverse health outcomes. And with respect to industry, even back when they were bringing out the bad information about cigarettes, it had been known for a long time that they did studies on nude mice and placed tar or other tobacco products on the skin of, and it was tumorigenic. It produced tumors. The internal document suggests that they suppressed that information or made it hard to come by, say, having a press conference and then disinviting everyone that was from the media, and the person shows up and they're in a room alone. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of incentives for industry to continue profit making, and without getting the news out there and without having some regulation, I don't think that the illness will be checked in the way it should be. I mean, I wouldn't want my kid to come home from college and say I've been in the hospital for 6 days because I just ended up vaping, and not at least be concerned enough to talk to legislators about it and try to get them to modify their behavior.
So it looks like regulation is now coming to the forefront on this issue. The state legislature will soon consider a ban on most flavored vaping products, the ones that young adults are most often using. The Trump administration has discussed rolling out something similar. What would you like to see done?
I'm all about free will, but I think I like to see the age limits. I like to see education. I like to see the consumer being aware of the dangers of the product. So I think, just like smoking, we should probably have some minimum age at which, you know, those things can be sold, not the 7th and 8th graders. And most people wouldn't, but that's an age where a lot of kids get hooked on vaping, and it's concerning, the trend that it's younger and younger, and you don't think that your middle schooler is going to school and vaping with his friends, but I mean, that's happening more and more. So I think you have to have some kind of age limit on the sale of the products.
Now, if there was a flavored ban put in place, the critics there say that if you ban them, kids are going to take their nicotine addictions to other e-cigarettes or conventional smokes, or simply the e-cigs will be pushed onto the black market where they could become potentially even more dangerous. Are those legitimate concerns if they start to regulate these?
So sort of like if you smoke a joint, you could end up using LSD someday? Like restricting it as a gateway to more dangerous drugs. I mean, as a society, I think we've done pretty well at eliminating tobacco use in some of the younger population, which if you go to Europe, you do not see that. There's a lot more people smoking that are younger there than you'll see on the street here. You have to make your best effort to make the society safe for everybody, but there's always going to be people that are going to go on the street and buy heroin too, and it's not lawful to do that, but yet, people are dying every day of heroin overdoses.
So you feel that the regulation has curtailed the use of it overall?
For tobacco, and you know, I would like to see a similar trend for the vaping products.
That was Dr. John Burr, a lung specialist at Advocate Brumman Medical Center, with WGLT's Eric Stock. The CDC reports of the more than 800 illnesses reported from vaping in the U.S., 70% are men.